Capital Convo on AM 690 and FM 94.3. The Answer is brought to you by the Savio Group of Companies, with the belief that we can solve all of our state's problems, including housing, by understanding the issues. We are ready to talk, and we want to hear from you. Join the convo by calling 833-296-TALK. Capital Convo is now in session.
Aloha mai kakou, aloha. Welcome to Capital Convos, or a conversation about what's going on at the state capitol. We're going to talk about what's moving in the big square building and take your questions about what you think is going to come out, what you think shouldn't come out of the session that's nearing, I think May 4 is when we're going to see NADA. And I want you to know that this Capital Convo is brought to you by the Minority Caucus, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I'm your host today, Wednesday, Representative Gene Ward, former Peace Corps volunteer, small businessman, and Vietnam veteran serving the good people of Hawaii Kai and the state of Hawaii. So if you don't live in Hawaii Kai, hey, I still work for you, just so you are very clear on that. I'm very honored today to have both a constituent and a special guest, and his name is none other than Dr. Cliff Otto. Cliff, are you on the air? Welcome to Capital Convo.
Yes, I am.
All right.
Yes, Cliff, thank you, Representative.
Great to hear from you. And for those of you who wonder, what am I going to talk to a doctor about? Well, it's not about your appendix. It's not about your it's not about your body. It's about your mind and about your health, because we're going to talk everything you ever wanted to know about marijuana, particularly medical marijuana. And if you got a question or a comment or a compliment or a complaint, you call, and I hope you got this number straight, 833-296-8255. If you got a comment, a question, et cetera, for Dr. Otto or myself on any of the issues we're going to talk about, 833-296-8255. Okay, Dr. Otto, people don't know who Dr. Yes. Otto is other than maybe Gene Ward and maybe the family that your friends that are listening. How about a bit of a bio sketch for your listeners to know who they're listening to, Dr. Cliff Otto?
Sure. So I've been known in various capacities. My formal training was in ophthalmology. I was a retina specialist, traveling to the Big Island every week, taking care of our patients with diabetic retinopathy and macular degeneration, and transitioned over to providing education and certifications for a very special group of patients who are exploring the medical use of cannabis for a variety of different conditions.
How long have you been doing that one, Dr. Otto? The medical cannabis?
So you know, I've been focusing on this issue since about 2010. In 2011, I was working with Senator Aspero on a research bill that got introduced and didn't really go very far, but specifically stayed away from doing what are called certifications for our medical cannabis program, because I didn't want to be labeled as a pot doc. I thought if I stayed out of that, maybe I would be listened to at the legislature. And okay. And I discovered at that time, you know, if you talk about cannabis at all, you're not going to go very far. So I've been doing certification since about 2013, which means certifying specifications, providing educational information.
And how did you go from the eye or ophthalmology to cannabis, which are, I guess, the lungs, the mind, the psyche, et cetera? How did you become interested in cannabis?
Well, you know, I'm glad that you kind of shifted over to the term cannabis, which I think is a more appropriate term. Marijuana has a lot of racist undertones to it. So, and cannabis, I think, from a scientific point of view, is more accurate. So it's actually not far of a leap. Some of the first patients who were involved in the federal program for cannabis had glaucoma. This is actually one of the first conditions that was recognized for federal cannabis. And there is a lot of research done on the ability of THC in particular to lower the intraocular pressure. Usually works, they say, in about 60% of patients, lowering about 25% intraocular pressure, which is not bad for a product, except you don't want to be smoking something every 3 hours. But there are certainly other ways to take advantage of THC. But that was kind of what made it a rather natural transition. I also have a master's in education, and so I've always relied on education, even in my retina practice, to help patients understand what they're going through, what treatments they're going to be getting, what the risks are. And all of that seemed to translate very easily into this environment of trying to help keep our medical cannabis patients safe, which is not easy in the current environment.
Before we get into that more controversial area, I want to go back to glaucoma. What percentage of patients actually have glaucoma? And you said it's over 60% effective in the curative or at least the preventative nature of the cannabis treatments?
Well, so there, what I was referring to was some research that was done that indicated that about 60% of the patients that they looked at had an effect of a reduction of about 25% in intraocular pressure. So that means not everybody is susceptible, you know, a little more than 50%. And I believe that was from smoking, from inhaling. Really, not much has been done with topical use of THC. I think that's an area that will probably be explored once we figure out this federal situation. But glaucoma is a huge issue and a major cause of vision loss.
What causes
in this country?
This
because
intraocular pressure. What causes that? Does everybody get it naturally what?
So the risk increases with age, and certain races are affected more than others. I don't think we fully understand all of the mechanisms. It's generally thought to involve a decrease in the outflow of the fluid that's being produced in the front of the eye. And if the fluid's not getting out fast enough, then the pressure builds. And slow increases in pressure can push on the optic nerve, on the peripheral part of the optic nerve where it leaves the back of the eye, and can start to damage those nerves that serve our peripheral vision. So usually patients lose peripheral vision without even noticing it, and that's why it's really important to do annual vision checks and peripheral vision checks and that kind of thing.
Well, let's move on. As you said, you have a teaching degree also, a degree in education. How about a brief history of medical cannabis in the state of Hawaii?
Well, so it's a very interesting history, and I don't think that one that's really understood completely. They say that our state legalized medical cannabis in the year 2000, and that's because if you look at the Associated Press phrase book, and there is such a thing, you know, that's what the media uses to decide what terms it's allowed to use, and that's the term that is used. They don't say authorized a special use of cannabis for patients under medical supervision, which I think is a little more accurate. So anyway, 2000, the governor signed our medical use of cannabis bill into law. We were one of the early states to do that, and we were the first state to do it by the legislative process. All the other states, California, Oregon, Washington, did it via a voter initiative. And so we had this program. I think I would call it more of a compassionate use program. When you say medical use, that I think raises the eyebrows of a lot of medical professionals, because we're not dealing with an FDA-approved drug product that you can get in the pharmacy. This is a substance that for the first 15, 16 years of the program, patients were making themselves. The state gave patients the right to grow their own cannabis. It started out as 7 plants, you know, 3 mature, 4 immature, then it went to 7 mature, then it went up to 10 where it's currently at. And so the state created this authorization. I think you guys at the legislature call it a carve out. It's basically an exemption, a state exemption, so that if you're using cannabis for the special use under state law, you're not subjected to the criminal penalties that go along with an unauthorized use of a Schedule I controlled drug. And cannabis is still Schedule I in Hawaii, it's still Schedule I at the federal level. So that exemption allows patients to use cannabis for specific conditions under the medical supervision of a provider.
And the feds don't have a intervening role in that? They kind of step back on any enforcement of Schedule I? Or
well,
how do they coexist?
So, not very well, I'll say that much. The situation is one that we're dealing with every day, because, you know, I get calls from patients almost daily telling me the negative consequences that they're getting from the fact that federal Schedule One is being applied to them. For instance, they can't get a firearms permit. Can't travel to the other islands with their medicine. They can't get federally subsidized housing. In some cases, can't get life insurance. A variety, you know, failing drug tests for employment, even though they're not impaired at work. So we're seeing a lot of negative consequences to our patients. And that's what kind of brought me into this. That's where my passion is because I don't want our patients to be injured. You know, our oath is to do no harm. And I'm trying to protect our patients from these harms that are occurring every day because of this situation where, you know, I don't know of any other program, any state program where in order to participate, you have to violate federal law. The state's not forcing you to, but that's the only way, because once you possess the simple possession of cannabis violates federal law, commercial production violates federal law. And we have, like you said, we have this situation of non-enforcement. We had previously the Cole memos, which were basically just saying, yeah, it's okay to violate federal law. We're not going to do anything about it. And I think the reason that Attorney General Sessions revoked these is because they were instilling an attitude that federal law doesn't matter. And that's, I think, what we're kind of seeing right now in Hawaii. It is not the kind of thing that we want to convey to our residents and to our patients, that it's okay to violate federal law. Maybe as we'll continue to discuss, I think that's really the focus of the problems that we're seeing currently.
Dr. Otto, let me do a shout out to any of your patients or anybody who is on medical marijuana who has experienced some of these difficulties conundrums, where you've got one law saying this and the other one saying that, and your medical prescription from your doctor says another thing. And I know there's a big difference. Let me be very open about this. I am totally for medical marijuana, but for recreational marijuana, and I know we're bumping up against that, is something of a different kettle of fish. That is something that I think we are facing now in the legislature. And I'm going to quote the former Representative Marcus Oshiro, who left the legislature, I think, 4 years ago and said, hey, within 5 years, you're going to have recreational marijuana in the state of Hawaii. Now, I hope that's not the case, because in my last beer summit, which, by the way, Dr. Octo, we missed you because we thought you were going to come and ask Speaker Psyche something about this. But there was a retired policeman who asked Speaker Psyche at the beer summit at the Coco Marina, Greek Marina. And basically he said that the House is in no hurry to deal with recreational marijuana, which everybody left very, and I'm still encouraged, but remember, we're still at the last section of the 60-day session, and anything can happen in these closed sessions or in these particular conference committees between the House and the Senate. So the medical marijuana is a totally separate kettle of fish with the recreational. But before we go into recreational, tell us about what's going on with these 8 dispensaries that we set up. Were they just a front for the recreational, or because they're complaining that they're not making any money, at least one of the bills that we had recently, and they're kind of not in good spirit and good straits?
Well, you know, I don't think it's surprising that they're complaining they're not perhaps getting the return that they expected. I don't think any legitimate business could survive under the conditions they're being put up against. You know, they have to grow indoors in a warehouse, which is doable, but not something you want to be doing in Hawaii. They should be growing outdoors in greenhouses. We should have a state organic certification so that they can prove that they're growing organically, and that patients would be able to have access to organically grown cannabis outdoors. You know, there's nothing like the sunlight in terms of the UV radiation and the way that it boosts these important compounds in the cannabis flower. So that's one thing. That's a huge expense for them. You know, building a warehouse from the ground up that can be able to have HVAC and clean rooms in order to produce so-called medical quality cannabis. And then the other thing is, you know, they all have to violate federal law, as I mentioned. So they can't use regular banking services. Most of their transactions in cash. There is starting to be some banks on the mainland that are allowing like these debit card things. So some transactions I've heard are occurring with some type of bank transfer, but most of it's still in cash, which is a huge public safety issue. And they can't deduct their regular business expenses from their federal tax returns because they're considered continuing criminal enterprises by the IRS. there are workarounds, you know, cost of goods, that kind of thing that reduces that. But still, that imagine having to pay 70% on all your revenue. I mean, you're a small businessman. You wouldn't be able to exist under that environment. So that cost is passed on to patients. Well, and as a result, as a result, patients can't afford most of these products. There are sales and stuff like that. For the most part, patients tell me they can't afford the products, and so then they go to other sources. So the dispensaries are in a very compromised position, and they need help. And they need help from the state to try and figure out how to make it so they're not federal criminals anymore.
Well, the latest data that I'm told, and this is not scientifically provable, but using what California and particularly Colorado went through, 80% even of your patients are getting black market because of price discounts at the black market level versus what's coming out of dispensaries and what the regulations are and the hassle to go through paying for them, et cetera. I don't know if that rings true with you, but the point is the black market is thriving under what's going on. And in California and Colorado, there has been cartels and Chinese mainland people coming in and just doing huge crop development, which gets around all of these legal things. And the whole point of many of my colleagues was, hey, this is going to be a windfall. We're going to get 70% GET tax on all these guys. We're going to make money. We're going to be able to put it into education, et cetera, et cetera. None, if hardly any of that has been realized, Dr. Otto. Very, very little, if any of that.
So I would say that I would be very surprised if 80% of my patients were using the illicit market. I'd say about half of my patients are probably producing their own. And I talk to my patients specifically about making sure that they're following state law, that they only grow the number of plants that they need, that they only possess the allowable amount. And they know that about whatever happens to any material that's being produced from their plants. So, but certainly there are patients who are being pushed into the illicit market because they're not able to grow on their own or they don't have access to a co-op. And so this is not a good situation for patients. And like you said, you guys were promised all this tax revenue. It's interesting to see when recreational legalization, you know, the momentum starts to build before the session. You start to see these groups come in, these national organizations coming in and with lobbyists and meeting with our lawmakers and talking about how much tax revenue other states have made. And you have to kind of think about what type of commercial interest these organizations have. Because, of course, if you're a commercial organization and you want to make a lot of money from cannabis, the thing to do is trying to get it legalized nationally. Mm-hmm. You want to control the national market. And so there's a lot of money being pumped in to create recreational programs within the state with the goal of strong arming the federal government into somehow descheduling. And I personally don't think that's the right approach. I think that this needs to be done at the state level and that the states need to figure this out because they're the ones that created this situation in the first place.
Well, Dr. Otto, I'm going to pause for what would you call it? The doc is in. The pot doc will answer any of your questions, particularly if you're his patient or you're just somebody who's interested in knowing all the ins and outs of medical marijuana plus the recreational marijuana that seems to be growing up steam. In particular, let me be very specific about some of you who have this knowledge about pricing. I want to know from somebody who'll call in, tell me what the dispensary price is for an ounce or a gram or however what you weigh it, how much it is at the dispensary level, and then how much it is on the street, i.e. the black market. I think that would be very informative. Many people will know what prices are. I unfortunately am outside of that circuit. I don't have it. I don't know if Dr. Otto, did you know what the medical versus the on-the-street price of a gram or an ounce is?
I'm sorry, Representative. I don't track the illicit market.
Okay. We're both ignorant. Okay, all of you who are now smoking marijuana listening to us, tell us how much you paid for a gram. Tell us how much the dispensaries charge and why you will not go to the dispensaries. We're looking for some insight. We're a little bit in our ivory tower, but the pot doc is in and it would be very helpful for Representative Ward to know. Give us the details down into the weeds about what this particular weed costs. That would be very, very helpful. Okay, moving on with the commercialization of medical cannabis. Do you have a prognostication about recreational marijuana? I know you followed it in the legislature, Dr. Otto. What's your sense of what the, I guess, the zeitgeist, the spirit of the moment is, and what you sense may or may not be coming out as we wrap up on May 4? Any predictions?
Well, you know, I was looking into my crystal ball before the session got underway, and I was seeing some very interesting indicators, like reassignments of chairs to some of these subject matter authorities who seem to have an interest in recreational legalization. I thought it was going to be a sure thing. And then, especially when the bill passed over from the Senate. And then, of course, we had this announcement from the speaker, which I thought was a bit unexpected. I'm grateful for it, actually. I think we need more time to figure this out. I'm in this for my patients. I've seen from my patients that this is a powerful medicine. I think even people who are saying they're using it recreationally are really using it to medicate for anxiety, depression, and insomnia. So I don't buy into the whole recreational use thing. This is a medicine. I think if we treated it as such, it would be much more beneficial for our patients and commercially within the state.
You mean buy it, let CVS and Longs and Walgreens make it a pharmaceutical, medical issue? I mean, a medical medicine, not quite that formal?
In order for it to get into Longs, it would have to be what's called an FDA-approved drug product, meaning it went through FDA clinical trials. To do that for a botanical product is very difficult. It's usually done for single compounds that are synthesized in the laboratory. So a botanical product is much more complex. But the thing is, if we're focusing on purely intrastate use, we don't need to go through that whole FDA process. We could create products in Hawaii that met FDA standards that we made available for local patients. Who knows? You know, if we could sort out this federal Schedule I issue, maybe some of our local insurance companies would be able to pay for some of these products that are being made locally if it could be done legally under state and federal law. So, no, I'm not talking about going down to Longs, but there's a lot the state could do with this because of its authority to decide how cannabis is used within the state.
Before I ask you some of the details of how that could be done, I want to ask somebody out there who has inhaled, who knows the price at the level of the street or the black market, or going through the dispensary. Somebody out there listening has inhaled and has that information. We need to know it. Just call in to 833-296-8255. 296-8255. 833-296-8255. We are talking to medical cannabis expert Dr. Cliff Otto, my constituent in Hawaii, who probably could answer any question you can imagine about medical marijuana, if not also recreational marijuana. We'll all take a stab at it. Okay, what needs to be done to rectify what we've got here as a schedule? The federal laws versus the state laws, and you said there's a lot of things the state can do. Give us a couple of examples.
Well, so one example is what all of you down at the state capitol did back in 2021 when you unanimously adopted a resolution that currently sits with the Department of Health, which proposes one solution, which is to try to get an exemption from the federal government for the so-called medical use of cannabis in Hawaii. Medical use is a strange term because, as I think I already said, it doesn't qualify as medical in most doctors' eyes. And so this is really a compassionate or a special use that the state could try to support and protect within the state. So you had asked a little bit about the commercialization. This, I think, is when a lot of the problems kind of started with our patient situation. Because when you bring money into the situation, things get a lot more complicated. And so somehow we have to remain focused on taking care of our patients. That should be primary. And I think if that was our focus, then everything else would kind of come into line. So the other thing, aside from this resolution, you know, I don't know if you had a chance to watch the confirmation hearing for Attorney General Lopez this morning. It was very interesting, actually. Did you have a chance to see that?
I have it on my email. It's a video, I think, 4 or 4.5 minutes that my staff put together, but I didn't get a chance to listen to it. Give us a summary of it, Cliff.
Well, so basically, Senator Sam Buenaventura was asking some questions of the nominee about recreational legalization, how the attorney general might be involved with that in terms of advising the legislature. The attorney general, actually, I was thrilled to hear that she announced that they are going to be volunteering to conduct an in-house task force to look at how Hawaii might go about legalizing the recreational use of cannabis without all the problems that the other states have created. And I'm not in favor of recreational legalization, but I think this is a very important step because we need to look very specifically at this problem with federal Schedule I. And any solution that we can come up with will definitely help our patients. It will help our dispensaries. And maybe if we can eliminate this conflict and the burden that's causing our dispensaries, they would see that actually medical use might be better. Intrastate medical use might be better than trying to go for national recreational legalization. So I was very encouraged by that statement and hope to follow up on that.
So what needs to be done specifically, Dr. Otto? In other words, well, you're saying that, look, medical marijuana should be a local decision, locally legal, but what can we do to make that the case that you said that's related to the Attorney General?
Well, so the Attorney General, of course, is the lawyer for all of our state lawmakers and the Office of the Governor. So they're the ones providing with legal advice. During this hearing this morning, Chair Rhodes raised some very interesting questions about the Office of the Attorney General acting as a policy advisor to the governor, something that I think might be holding us back from coming up with solutions that the state can act upon to deal with this federal situation. So what we need to do is create a legal source of cannabis in Hawaii that is legal under state and federal law. We need our producers, namely our dispensaries, to be able to produce cannabis legally. They're already doing it legally under state law. Now we need this other piece of having them be regulated.
And have other states got the other piece? Dr. Otto, do other states have the other piece that you've learned the curve from or not yet?
So I've learned a lot from Iowa. I think they are the farthest along on this. They adopted legislation that asked their Department of Public Health to write some letters to try and prevent federal funding from being withheld from some of their schools and long-term care facilities. They wrote that letter. You know, it wasn't really very strong. It didn't address the issue directly as I think it needs to be. But this is a complex issue, and it needs everybody to be on board. We can't be expecting like individual lawmakers to be sticking their heads out just to promote this, even though it might make sense. And I think you know the legislature already did what it could do, which was to express its will in a resolution unanimously that something has to be done about the situation. Now we need the Attorney General and the executive branch to wrap their heads around this and to come up with a solution. It cannot be allowed to continue, and I don't think we're seeing enough action in Congress.
Let me ask the question a little bit differently. The same question asked differently. Can the federal government legalize the medical use of marijuana without legalizing recreational marijuana? In other words, the carve out is, okay, at the federal level, we're going to say, all you guys in the states, your medical marijuana is good, it's safe, it's legal now, but not recreational marijuana. Would that be doable or resolvable? Can they separate, bifurcate the two?
Well, so the DEA and the FDA don't recognize so-called medical cannabis because they're...
But if they did, though, but if they did recognize medical cannabis, could they then separate it from recreational cannabis? Is the point.
Well, they're not able to because of the way that they're designed. Medical use to them means FDA approved. So they are not able to recognize medical use. That's why we're having a lot of this problem. But what they can do is they can regulate producers within the state if it is within, if it's consistent with public health and safety. And there's a specific statute within the Controlled Substances Act that allows for that. This is why we have registered producers of peyote down in Texas that are supplying peyote to the Native American Church. They are registered with the DEA. They are allowed to collect and distribute peyote to the Native American Church, but they're not users themselves. They are producers.
I'm going to give you a silly example, again, using the analogy of, can the feds say, okay, you can sell beer and make it legal in your state, but you can't have hard liquor. We're going to let you have a beer license. You're going to have alcohol, but you can't take hard liquor. I'm using this as the medical is the beer and the hard liquor is the recreational.
So I think what you're getting at is interstate commerce. And so what can the federal government regulate? If it's traveling between states, then yes, they can regulate it. But right now we have a situation where we have producers of cannabis for purely intrastate use. That falls under the jurisdiction of the state. So the federal government, you don't see them suing our state to shut down our program, because this is a constitutional authority that the state is exercising. Mm. But when you start to get into interstate, like inter-island, then you run into federal jurisdiction. So what they could do is they could say, okay, Hawaii, we are going to regulate your dispensaries so that the material they're producing is legal under federal law, and you can do with it whatever you want. If you want to set up a purely medical program, that's up to you. If you want to have a dual program, that's up to you. If you're going to start doing interstate, then we're going to get involved. So I think the state has a lot more power to decide what it wants to do with cannabis than it realizes. And that also means potential for making.
Governor Green has said to the effect that if he gets a recreational marijuana bill on his desk, he will sign it. Now, if that takes place, how does that, vis-a-vis what you've just said, change the entire game plan or the whole scenario in Hawaii?
Well, so the statement I've seen from Senator Green's office is that he would sign a recreational use bill if it was consistent with public health and safety. That is the same language that is in the Controlled Substances Act. The production has to be consistent with public health and safety, and that's what he's calling upon our legislature to do. Make a bill that is consistent with public health and safety, and I will sign it. And that's what I think the Attorney General is going to be helping the state with. But it can't leave out this important piece of making sure that we're not violating federal law. And this pathway that I talked about is a way to make that happen.
Okay, I'm going to ask another very simple question. And I hope to provoke any of your patients or other patients who have a medical marijuana card, which, by the way, are there, 35,000? How many thousand people have medical marijuana cards?
Roughly about 35,000.
35,000. Okay, there's 35,000 listeners, and even we have 1%. We have a few hundred people who could call in. And I'm still going to say, hey, give me what the price of marijuana is on the street. Give me what it is on the dispensaries. And we're not going to take your name. We're not going to look at your number. We're not going to report you. This is public information for the sake that other people can know what's going on, particularly a good Dr. Otto and a representative in the legislature to know what's actually going on the street, because I know it's available anywhere, almost any time, in any case that it's available. In the dispensary, it's a little bit different. But as a marijuana user, my question is, what do your patients want to have happen? Let me be very also realistic. Basically, people are doing marijuana anywhere, anytime they want it, in any place. I mean, I go jogging in Hawaii at night, and I go by a few buildings, and every night I get a big whiff of marijuana. I do inhale while I'm running because I'm getting out of breath. But to me, it's like it's going on in practice de facto everywhere. And I know you're fighting the de jure or the legal part of it, but isn't this basically the genie's out of the bottle and look, this stuff is proliferating, except hey, if you do it officially, you can't get on an airplane with it. Legally, you can't get on a boat, but they are getting on airplanes, they are getting on boats, and they are going inter-island. How many of your patients have been put in jail for that, for example? I know they're anxious, they're probably nervous, but how many actually have been cited, fined, and brought to court over what we're trying to figure out? And I'm not trying to be the devil's advocate. I'm trying to be what realistically I see on the street every day.
Sure. So I would say that most patients are not being subjected to criminal investigations. The law enforcement is not spending their resources on this. It's not worth it. So that's not really the issue. The issue is all these other unintended consequences that we see going on. And what you're talking about with the prevalence of cannabis and the fact that people really just don't care about the law anymore, I think is being promoted by this position that our state is taking that it's okay to go ahead. It's okay to violate federal law. This is not the message we want to be sending to our residents. And in addition, smoking, that's a whole other issue. Smoking of anything is not good for your health. So there are other ways. There are healthy ways to inhale cannabis using herbal vaporizers that we should be promoting, that the Department of Health should be promoting to increase the safety and reduce the harm of cannabis.
On the smoking issue,
we're not getting any of that.
Dr. Otto, yeah. On the smoking issue, I find a lot of my colleagues who are so against smoking are very pro recreational marijuana. Is that a little bit of a, in other words, when you smoke marijuana, are you basically doing the same carcinogenic procedure that otherwise people with tobacco are doing? Or you're not? So how did they put those juxtapose and seek logic in it?
Well, that has been studied, and they have found that the components, the byproducts of combustion from tobacco and cannabis are very similar. You've got carcinogens, you got tars, you got carbon monoxide. They did studies of this at UCLA, and they kind of found the reverse of what they were expecting. They thought cannabis smokers would have an increased risk of lung cancer. They actually found a reduced risk. Maybe that's because THC has some anti-cancer properties. We don't know. That all needs to be researched. But the reason that smoking is so popular is because it's a very effective mode of administration. You can control how deeply you inhale, how long you hold the smoke, and the effect is very rapid, within minutes. So a lot of pain patients find that inhaling cannabis is very effective for pain management. And I think that's why it's very popular. Also, the taste of the cannabis smoke a lot of people seem to enjoy, but we should be moving away from smoking. There's some very good devices that allow for the what's called the herbal vaporization of the cannabis flower that doesn't require combustion, doesn't have any of the harmful carcinogens that the smoke has.
What percentage of the people are actually doing the smoking versus this more, what would you call it, genteel way of inhaling, or not inhaling, ingesting?
Well, most of my patients, a vast majority, are inhaling cannabis because they're dealing with symptoms that they need rapid relief from. They will also use sometimes some edible products for longer relief. A small number of patients will only do edibles, maybe like 10% of my patients. And then I have a couple of patients who only do topical use. They don't want to put anything in their body, but they're getting relief from their arthritis through topical products.
Are edibles sold on the street, though? Or they have to go to the dispensary?
I think you can get anything you want on the street.
Okay, I thought I was getting too far down into the weeds here. Okay, you can get... I didn't know you... See how naive I am, and I didn't know you can get edibles on the street. Now, whether you can trust them, given what the police have said regarding fentanyl being laced on so many things, particularly cannabis, fentanyl cannabis, I mean, that's really scary. And hopefully there's going to be fentanyl strips, which, by the way, people should know that we passed the law that says fentanyl strips, i.e. testing for fentanyl on any drugs, are going to be legal, I think, in a number of weeks, because right now they are illegal. They're considered drug paraphernalia, and they are contraband. So hopefully it's going to come up into Long's and CVS, Walgreens, and you can buy it off the shelf, just like you can some of the things now with Narcan and other ways of keeping people at least alive from some of their habits. Okay, Dr. Otto, what do we do now with the state of the art of the legislature? I know you said you don't see in a crystal ball everything that's going to happen, but you do see some indications. I mean, I know you and I have been talking about this for, what, 2 or 3 years? Give me another 2 or 3 years out from here onward and what you see that must happen or should happen.
Well, I can certainly see us moving towards recreational legalization. There's every year it seems like there's more momentum. And we have to decide as a state if that's really something that we want. And people need to get involved with the legislative process in order to be heard, so that, you know, the only information that our lawmakers are getting is not just from lobbyists who might represent just the commercial side. So the fact that our new attorney general is going to be holding an in-house task force shows how much effort is going to be put behind this. There was a previous task force that was convened by Attorney General Connors on this subject, but we never saw any result. There were no reports or anything. In this case, the attorney general has said that she's going to make sure that the legislature gets this. There's going to be a package that the legislature receives. So it'll be very interesting to see how this federal issue is addressed. It cannot just be glossed over like it has in the past. So if we can figure out the federal situation, then I think this whole concern about whether it's medical or recreational is going to go away, because I think we'll be able to regulate it much better if people are not having to violate federal law, if the commercial organizations don't have to violate federal law. So, you know, you've been asking patients to call in and talk. And this, I think this kind of emphasizes what our patients are up against. They're very cautious.
Don't ask, don't tell. Yeah.
Well, I mean, they're being discriminated against left and right. It's almost like they're secondhand citizens, because they're trying to heal themselves. I think one of the ways it's very easy to tell a patient from somebody who's just interested in abusing it is they want to use as little as possible to be functional. They don't want to be sitting on the couch eating potato chips all night. They want to be functional. They want to be moving. They want to be working. They want to be sleeping, so the next day they can be productive.
You know, one of the disadvantages of those, I think, just like COVID studies, you get studies on both sides. Hey, marijuana makes your young brains soft, and they run into depression and suicide. And then the other studies say, look, there's no effect whatsoever unless you're taking it every day, a couple times a day. The science isn't very clear about the risks of the recreational marijuana. That's my fear. The data, just like COVID, it's only now we're saying, hey, you know, COVID, these shots, we don't really need that many. And there's a cure called, I forget, the Napoxidol or whatever, which we never had before. It was like, take these pills, go home and, you know, get some rest. Mm-hmm. I hope there, and as a doctor, what is the science progressing on the ill effects, the good effects of THC? And all of the things that now are a big marketing thrust, particularly on THC. And then the young people who, you know, just from social media, there's a lot of accusations and correlations that, hey, social media is creating a lot of suicidal kids that have yet to have their brains fully developed.
Well, research on cannabis is progressing exponentially, mostly in other countries. But if we were able to figure out this federal situation, we could do a lot of research here in the state. We don't need FDA-approved studies. We have a beautiful cancer center sitting down there in Kakaako. We could do a lot of these studies and figure out for ourselves what the risks are. Hopefully that will be maybe some things that the Attorney General addresses in their package. But there are things that we could do to sort out what the risks are. The lack of research has really hindered us, and the commercialization is moving much faster than I think the governments can keep up with.
Yeah, very, very true. So the FDA doesn't do research per se?
Well, so you can do research on cannabis with FDA approval, but because of the Schedule I status, it's only research. There is no pathway for developing a FDA-approved drug product that you could then commercialize. So it's all contributing to the body of knowledge, but there's no commercial pathway, so it's not really attractive to commercial enterprises and pharmaceutical companies. But there's a lot of work being done in this area, kind of hoping that things are going to open up. But my point
Dr.
is,
Otto,
I don't think...
Okay.
Dr. Otto, you're doing an excellent job.
Hey, okay, we have a caller who comes in. Go ahead. Please proceed.
I am a patient of Dr. Cliff Otto, and I want to commend him for fighting against the announcer's record room questions. Dr. Otto is not calling for anything illegal. He's calling for the use of medical and recreational marijuana for people like me who suffered from extreme back pain and were able to overcome it by the temporary use of the medical marijuana.
Good for you.
Which is legal in our state, and which I commend the Attorney General to support.
I think that's a good vote for Dr. Otto and what he's been saying. And I would ask, as one of the patients, do you do the smoking or do you do the THC application on the skin, or is it both, or which?
I do the THC. I don't smoke, and I'm against smoking. It causes other illnesses that you don't need. But THC should be legalized both federally and locally. And Dr. Otto is doing an excellent job supporting its use. I want to commend him. I know many patients who depend on Dr. Cliff Otto, and he's a very reputable man and understands the need for people who are in pain or who have anxiety disorders. I'm a clinical health psychologist. I treat people with anxiety disorders, and I have forgotten to use Dr. Otto. I will now. Because sometimes the drugs they give my patients are much more harmful than the THC they can get in a substance. What kind of substance did I use?
The tincture.
I used the marijuana tincture.
The tincture.
And had no ill effects and became better, and my local PCP approved of its use.
Madam, would that be from the dispensaries then, the tincture, or would that be otherwise?
I got it from a dispensary, yes. I got it legally from a dispensary at the request of my Dr. Eugene Lee. And Dr. Otto is doing a wonderful job supporting the point and convincing our Attorney General. And the announcer should have listened to this morning's program if he was going to interview Dr. Otto, and he'd know what the current status is. So, again, I commend Dr. Otto, and as one of his patients, I give him many thanks and kudos for the work he's been doing.
Well, thank you for your call. That was quite an endorsement. Thank you so much for that.
Okay, bye-bye.
Dr. Otto, you're the real deal. We've got it now empirically proven here.
Well, and I would like to commend our host for being able to entertain this idea. I know that might not be that easy as a Republican, but I think this is an issue that I'm hoping that the Hawaii Republican Legislative Caucus can discuss, because this is also a states' rights issue. I just hope that a dislike for recreational legalization doesn't drive us away from looking for solutions, because I think working out a solution would be much better than just having us steamrolled by programs that are being set up in other states. You've always been open to discuss this issue, and I really appreciate that.
Well, it's been an interesting conversation. We've got 5 more minutes, and we have another caller, hopefully one who's going to give me some prices about what we asked for earlier. Caller, you're on the air. Please proceed.
That is exactly what I am going to do. So the state buying it, pardon, buying it on the street is about $150 to $200 for an ounce. And going to a medical dispensary is $350 for an ounce. So it's significantly higher.
Wow, it's double, almost literally double, or let's say close to 50 to 70 to 80% more. Wow, that is very insightful. Dr. Otto, do you have any comment or question regarding that? Is that kind of mesh with your understanding? $300, and we're only talking about an ounce now. I don't know how far an ounce would go, but $300 is not cheap if you're using an ounce a day.
It's about so, double the price.
So 28 grams in an ounce. I've heard that a gram can be maybe upwards of $20 a gram, but I know there are sales, and so there's always the effort to attract patients and offer them access through sales. But my opinion is patients shouldn't be picking out medicine or products that they're looking for a specific effect based on what's cheapest.
Unfortunately.
So we need to make, I mean, I know that's how a lot of things are done, but in medicine in particular, And this is such an individualized product. I've never seen such variability in how patients respond to this. We need to be looking at how individual patients are responding and maximizing the effect that they're getting. And you can't do that when patients are just purchasing whatever's cheapest.
Well, Dr. Otto, the reason, even in politics, people vote their wallets. Which candidate is going to get them the most bennies? Which kind of programs are going to discount their cost of living? So doing the marijuana, I think, as you're saying, you may be endangering your life when you do some of these things. But boy, when you got a 100% difference between $150 to $300, people, particularly in Hawaii, the Alice families, asset limited income challenged earners, when every dollar away from food and just basically the roof over the head really could make a difference. So I could see how. And again, the data says 80% of the users in California and in Colorado are doing black market. So that tells me price sensitivity is key, and people who are doing marijuana are as savvy as all the other economic variables in what you buy, what kind of car you drive.
And if I may interject.
Please do.
I do concur with the price being almost astronomically 50%, 60% higher, but there is not that much fear of purchasing it from with it being laced with such, because there's many people on the island who has a friend or a brother's friend that is growing the plant here or on the island. So you know it is quote unquote pure, and you don't have the fear of it being laced. So when you do your due diligence in finding the price and finding the plant, if it's either sativa or indica, and you know it's safe, it feels like it makes you're making a costly decision on to buy it.
That's a very good point. The network of reliability, if your friends or otherwise, and Dr. Otto, and please stay on the line, caller, that the bill that we had said that there are people who are kind of collectively putting themselves together, and there's a law that says you can't have more than 5 growers, and they want to, or is it less than 5 or 3? They want to make it more, because it's that, as I think the caller is saying, look, these are people you can trust. And you don't have to worry about fentanyl lacing, et cetera. But then the rub is that the dispensaries are saying, hey, you guys are taking away our business by doing these collective kind of cooperatives among 5 to 7 families. Do you have any update on how that should be treated?
Well, my understanding is currently there is no limit on how many patients can grow together. There is something on the books that says at the end of 2024, it will go to 5. And we have a bill that's going to go to conference that would put it at 50. But the reason we have co-ops is because of the not only the pricing, but also the quality that the patients are perceiving. They prefer, and this is what they're telling me, they prefer cannabis grown outdoors under what they believe to be organic conditions.
And the engineer prefers that I wrap this up saying, thank you, Dr. Otto. Thank you, callers at Let Your Not Be Troubled. Aloha always wins. Thank you, and aloha.
AM 690, FM 94.3. The Answer was brought to you by the Savio Group of Companies, with the belief that we can solve all of our state's problems, including housing, by understanding the issues. Join the convo every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 5 p.m. right here on The Answer.